first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best foot, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Tuesday, May 14th, 2019. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing, my friend? How did you experience the Premier League Championship Sunday?
Mostly out of boredom, because it was the first year where very, very little was on the line. I mean, what was there anything on the line? I'm trying to remember.
It was Liverpool and Man City that were still competing for the championship, and that's the first.
Yes and no, but I mean, that was ginned up. I mean, you know, the reality of it was like
Brighton was going to fold, and City was going to walk away with it.
Yeah, that Liverpool and Man City were both going to win their games because they weren't playing strong opponents, and they had so much on the line, like. You're not going to lose to Brighton and Hove Albion to blow the Champions League, to blow the Premier League on the final day.
Okay, that's fair. I enjoyed it. I had the New York Red Bulls buddy that I have from work finally got skis and boots. So we had a spring day up in the Beavers, the new section at Arapahoe Basin. And I managed to go, I pre-recorded both games and then I turned my phone off. I didn't even need it for directions going to A Basin or anything. And I managed to walk in, still not be looking at the internet or anything, and watch the entirety of the Man City game. So as of, this would have been like at 6 p.m. when I finally saw full time and Man City won. You know, that would have been about 8 hours and change after the result was actually secured. And I had that moment without it being spoiled. My dad and a couple of his old work friends occasionally have a bet every year to see who can go the longest without knowing the result of the Super Bowl. And that is a very, very hard thing to do. And I'm proud of myself for missing that. We've got a very complicated and very, I would almost say, controversial banter topic tonight, Mark. You were aware of it on Saturday at DSG Park before I was. Do you want to talk about the rundown of what happened and how we think about it?
Yeah, so it was made aware to me over Twitter that, and I'm sure many of you have already seen these tweets, that the supporters group for RSL, which is called the Official Riot, or the Official RSL Riot Supporters Group, something like that, tweeted that they were told by Rapid staff that they were not permitted to fly a rainbow flag. But after a small amount of investigating by your intrepid reporter, Matt Pollard, it was discovered that the flag apparently had, at least at first, Matt, you tweeted out that the flag had, an Antifa symbol on it. And I think it's the symbol of three arrows in a diagonal.
Yes, the three black arrows in a diagonal. So that was going across and kind of in conjunction with the striped rainbow colors as well of the LGBTQ plus.
Is that what you were told, or is that something that you actually saw?
I did not see it live. I was shown multiple photos of it by various Rapid staff, people who I respect and I trust for, in terms of like them, not from them being a mouthpiece of the club, but they tell me something, you know, they're telling it legitimately to me. So I did not see the flag in person. I saw multiple pictures of the flag in different contexts, and it was clearly in that part of the stadium. In the RSL supporter section, it was clearly a member, someone wearing RSL general paraphernalia with them. I cannot confirm whether or not the person who brought the flag or any of the pictures that I saw of the person waving the flag is actually a member of the supporters group. So I hesitate to cast whatever messaging from the flag may be, positive or negative, on the actual supporters group itself.
So I had to go down a bit of a rabbit hole in writing an article about it, which was trying to parse out what the league's official policy was and where the wiggle room was for individual clubs to make a determination. And I mean, what I came to was essentially that MLS's official rules state that, fans are not permitted to say or display banners, posters, or flags which are, incite violence, are hateful, racist, homophobic, misogynist, or political in nature. And so the interesting fact about that is, or the interesting, you know, knife's edge of that is that you can make an argument that Antifa is an organized pro-violence political movement, which should not be displayed at games. Or you could make a parallel argument, which is that, Antifa is, or being an anti-fascist is an anti-racist, anti-racist stance. It doesn't necessarily infer that you're going to commit acts of violence or that you support violence. And then it's not really an organized political movement of any kind, which to that end is essentially what both Seattle Sounders and Portland Timbers say, and is also why they have essentially backed their supporters to carry those flags. One of the interesting things, and the final thing I'll say, Matt, is this. The Rapids made an official statement. And in their official statement, they said, we are just upholding MLS policy that, this kind of political speech is not permitted, which is not really entirely correct. Since there are other teams in MLS that basically say Antifa is not forbidden. My own personal editorial comment is to soften that up and to say, I don't know whether the Rapids did the right thing or the wrong thing here. I'm like right on the fence about it, but I will say that like there is a dangerous slippery slope argument that could happen here, which is, you know, there are, like a dozen, more than a dozen, probably five dozen different little sub organizations that are racist in nature in the United States that are, you know, pro-Europa identity, you know, white nationalist this, like, you know, and so on and so forth. And, you know, it's very difficult to say that one organization is, you know, just a political organization, whereas another one is a racist organization. Like, you're asking soccer teams to be the arbiters of these things. It's probably safer, to be honest, to say, listen, that's a political statement. It's a political symbol. It's a known political symbol, and we don't allow that at the game, right? Like, if you were to carry the donkey of the Democratic Party or the elephant of the Republican Party, like, they're not necessarily offensive, but I think it's not totally inappropriate for an MLS team to say, like, listen, that just doesn't belong here.
No, you bring up a lot of really good points, Mark. I think that the situation that the club and really the league is in a lot of similar situations that, say, the social media platforms, the Twitters and the Facebooks of the world, where if you just say, well, we don't want to have to take an opinion or appear to take sides, so we're just going to allow, like, anything that is said that isn't, you know, legally a crime from the standpoint of, like, plotting or threatening violence against someone, is fair game. But then at least a lot of the rhetoric right now that at least the general public would say is incendiary or inflammatory, or, you know, is the person who's egging things on first, have either historically or they've been legislated or kicked off those platforms, are mostly those coming from conservative voices. And a lot of these people, at least in the social media context, are making those decisions in, you know, the San Jose, Silicon Valley area, you know, a bastion for liberal thought and you know, overwhelmingly Democratic. You know, that's Nancy Pelosi territory. And so, you know, are you allowed to make a political statement as long as it's one that generally agrees with the league or generally the club holds to be a very good value, or that, you know, because technically, you know, refugees welcome. One could, in theory, perceive that to be, you know, a Portland Timbers supporter opening that up and implying a perspective that Portland should be a sanctuary city that, under my very crude understanding of it, you know, is still illegal or is in a way such that the federal government could push back on that to where state legislation in Oregon would be out of compliance or potentially city or county legislation within the Portland area. So I agree that this is, that it's a very narrow standpoint. And I mean, you know, there was, I almost don't want to talk about this right now because, you know, I opened up my Twitter after, you know, putting it away when I went to bed on Saturday night after the game. No internet from when I woke up, met up with my friend, went to A Basin, came back, watched the City game, and then got on the internet for the first time that day, maybe 15 minutes before one of the craziest Game of Thrones episodes in the history of the series came on. And I was never sure, Mark, how many notifications you could have on Twitter before it would say something plus. For me, it was 99 plus, and it was just scrolling through of people going back and forth about either what was good about Antifa, what was bad about Antifa, how it was like anti-fascist, but then also had its own undertones of violence. You know, was it, you know, if Antifa stands for being anti-fascist, and if being anti-fascist is, you know, America choosing to go to war against Germany in the 1940s, then, you know, how much, and a lot of that vitriol, unfortunately, was directed at me. You know, I posted a tweet immediately after saying, you know, on Saturday night saying, I'm just the messenger in this. I'm reporting this based on good sourcing that I have, and I've been able to back it up and everything. And a lot of people, understandably angry about the subject matter itself, were directing their anger at me as if I had something to do with that decision. And I just, part of me just wants to end this conversation right now, just because, like, Saturday night and in through Sunday and even into Monday as well was me facing the firing squad as the messenger. So I guess I'll just close it with, this is something that MLS has had trouble before. This is not a Rapids or a Colorado or a Rio T specific issue. You didn't really touch on it, Mark, that I'm kind of surprised. There's still open neo-Nazis going to NYCFC games and sitting in the supporters section in central and left field at Yankees Stadium. And there have been attempts by the supporters group, by Yankee Stadium itself, by NYCFC to curtail or deal with that. Most of that has been extremely ineffective. There's still a lot of general people within the New York City FC community and fan base that feel uneasy about it, that are not comfortable with that presence being at the game, that feel that it's a deterrent to what the club stands for, that being there for soccer, being inclusive, or even just the atmosphere of like, hey, you know, like say, Matt, Mark, that, you know, you were living in the Bronx, for example, and, you know, I don't know, independent of your religion, would you want to take Iggy to a supporters group and sit in that section? Would you want to go sit at Highmark Stadium with the supporters group if you knew that there were active neo-Nazis in that supporters group? I, you know, someone who is in no way close to having kids anytime soon, that's not an environment I would want to take a young child to. That's not an environment I would take either of my young cousins to. And that's a poor reflection of the club. And NYCFC, I think, has tried to control that both in the literal sense and in a messaging sense. Don Garber came out with a couple comments about it that I want to say Jonathan Tanwell wrote an article on. Maybe it was something in The Athletic. And, you know, I kind of took it as absolute lip service and everything. So there are bigger issues on this. It doesn't seem to be Rapid specific. And it's something that I don't think the league or any of its clubs or just we as a country have kind of filtered out to see, you know, is this a rational reaction to something? And I can see where people have anger on both sides, but I think the Rapids took the conservative standpoint of just following the league policy, even if it's something that other clubs haven't. And there's a whole bunch of ways in which I think the league and all of its clubs need to get on the same page with things. And we can reference DMs of conversations on topics not related to this Antifa flag issue, Mark, in which clearly that hasn't been sorted out at the league level or the club level or, you know, at, you know, One Victory Boulevard, Commerce City, Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just add, I referenced the NYCFC issues in my article for Denver Post. And I think it's really well said that, like, they're trying to deal with a bunch of open far right affiliated fans, some of whom have committed criminal acts, and they're being sometimes they're being ineffective and sometimes they're just being soft and it's a little unclear. A second thing I'll say is I know this for a couple years ago, I was at a Rapids game and, there were fans from RSL who went through the east side, stands and somebody was throwing up, white power signs and like yelling Sieg Heil and stuff like that, in the stands. And a couple of Rapids fans from like section 108 saw this guy doing it and they just went right up to someone on the security staff and they were like, hey, this guy's doing this. It's that guy right over there. And the security staff, like without missing a beat, this was told to me as it was happening or like, you know, half an hour, 20 minutes after it happened. Security staff, without missing a beat, walked up to the guy and said, you're gone. Goodbye. And just escorted him to the door and pushed him out. And that was that. Like, so, I mean, you know, and that's anecdotal. But my experience has always been that a Rapids game is a good place to be for these kinds of things, that like being a jerk and a jackass and a racist is not going to fly there. But, you know, there are other examples where the team hasn't really stepped in when things haven't been, folks have been not necessarily agreeing with the best possible behavior being, exhibited by fans. So, you know, I mean, it's a work in process each and every week. It's interesting that, honestly, you know, this was a much bigger story in the Denver Post based on page views than the game itself. And that's what happens when your team is fairly irrelevant at the bottom of MLS and losing every week, that like, you know, other stories become more interesting and more important.
The next time that the CBA comes up, Mark, I look forward to seeing the league, Commissioner Don Garber, and all the clubs get together and have a more unified and more open policy on this that can be enforced league-wide and across all stadiums, regardless of whether it's home supporters or away supporters. And it's in a way that promotes peace, safety at the games, and then just the general well-being in a manner that is open and I think reflective of the values that MLS America and all of its clubs aspire to be.
We have to talk about the fact that we have one more, I don't know if it's a banter item where this is just a shameless plug slash advertisement for our own wares, but we have a Patreon account for this podcast, not because Matt and I think we're going to get rich or anything. Far from it. We do this podcast because we like hanging out and drinking a beer and talking about football each week. But honestly, hosting the podcast on Blueberry, which is our podcast hoster, costs money. And we would like to pay less of that money and for me, feed my children, and for Matt, buy higher quality of craft beers each and every week. So in that effort, we have started a Patreon. In order to incentivize your interest in joining our Patreon account, which you can find at patreon.com/rapids96podcast, we are making this special amazing offer, which is that you can get a mug that says Holding the High Line on it and Hello Darkness, My Old Friend on the backside if you either subscribe for $40. Now, Patreon only allows you to subscribe month by month. We don't want you to give us $40 a month. That's an insane contribution, unless you're a millionaire, at which point you should be spending lots of your money on our amazing podcast. But what we would want you to do is subscribe for $40 for 1 month. You know, cut it off after that and we'll mail you a mug. Or if you'd like to be a recurring sponsor of the podcast, just give us $5 a month and you will also get a mug. Matt will collect your email address. He will email it to me. I will – your email address. Your actual regular snail mail carbon copy.
A functional mailing address.
Real world brick and mortar mail address. And I will mail you this amazing mug with a hilarious picture on one side and the amazing Holding the High Line logo on the other. And you can drink all manner of beverages. It could be coffee. It could be tea. If you're smart and you're trying to endure what might wind up being the worst soccer season in Major League Soccer history, nay, in world history. You may want to fill this mug to the brim with an alcoholic beverage of your choice each and every time you sit down to watch our beloved Colorado Rapids absolutely make a mess of a regular and normal soccer game. So $40. Oh, I'll also throw in some stickers. We've got some great Holding the Highline stickers. You can put them on your computer so you don't accidentally swap your Lenovo or your IBM clone or your Macintosh with your coworker who also has the identical black laptop at work. So I'll throw in some stickers. I'll send you a mug. It's more than worth it. And if you are still listening right now and haven't fast forwarded, I say kudos to you, sir or madam. Kudos. And that, Matt, is my shameless plug for our Patreon. And now we can talk about the football.
Listeners, this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, same thing that always happens to the Rapids happened again, and it happened in a Rocky Mountain Cup clash. They lost 3-2 to the arch rivals from the slightly north and very west, Real Salt Lake. Albert Rusnak gets a scoring open in the 25th minute after a VAR review of a potential PK that was ultimately called on Sebastian Anderson, who was starting at left back as opposed to his usual right back position. He fouled Sebastian Salcedo in the box. Corey Baird absolutely burns Anderson in the 27th minute with a dink over the top and then chips Tim Howard. Colin Acosta gets the pids on the board in the 3rd minute of first half stoppage time after some great combination play that had Lewis making his Rapids debut along with Lawless Abubakar, who were both acquired at the trade deadline last week, setting it up with a run into Sam Nicholson, who also started in this game, and Kellen Acosta has a thumping rebound shot to go past Putna, the goalkeeper for RSL, as Nick Raimondo was injured in this game. So 2-1 to the bad guys at halftime. Danny Wilson cleans up a play off of a redirect off of a corner 2 minutes after the first half, after the second half started. And then Sam Johnson with a wide open opportunity goes upper 90 in the 53rd minute to make it 3-2. Lots of chances for the Pids in the final couple of minutes. You had Lawless Abubakar potentially getting on the board, but he was called offside. And then just a couple minutes before that, you had as I'm sure we'll talk about, Mark, a very controversial VAR call in which it was off of a corner and Shinyashiki kind of gets off balance and the ball appears to go off an RSL defender's arm and then off of Keegan Rosenberry's arm, and then Rosenberry shoots, at least from my vantage point, Mark, on the west side of the stands. It looked with the angle like it went into the net. It turns out it was just wide of the net. Very, very long review by the officiating crew, and ultimately no handball, no goal, no PK or anything. And the Rapids have now tied the 2007 RSL record for the longest start to a season without a win. And then if you actually look at points per game going into 11 games through the season, this is the worst start in MLS history, regardless of era. Mark,
error works just as well, Matt.
Okay. It's kind of hard for us to have you follow our usual structure just with the way that the form has been going for the Pids, and then also in the context of this game. So I guess simply, Mark, where do you want to start?
There's no good thing, so we've got to throw a good thing out. Danny Wilson wasn't total garbage. I mean,
That is all I've got.
Well, I think you started in a good place with mentioning Sebastian Anderson committing a foul in the box, but also he got burned a couple times, and he started as the left back, and after about 20 minutes, apparently he got swapped. He swapped to the other side of the field because he was doing that poorly, which is not a great... It doesn't speak well of the guy. I mean, Sam Vines is apparently out with an ankle sprain that he suffered in training this week. But, you know, it's so interesting. You know, we got Keegan Rosenberry in the offseason at right back. We lost Edgar Castillo, but it looked like between Sam Vines and maybe Dylan Cerna at the beginning of the season, you know, the fullback position was going to be okay. And then after a couple games, you know, Cerna had a couple good early games. I mean, me and Marco Cummings both wrote basically the same article the same week, which was that, you know, we were all excited about how Dylan Cerna was finally, you know, looking good. And then Dylan Cerna came out and played terribly for two games in a row. You know, Sam Vines hasn't really locked down the left back position. Seb Anderson is young and is playing like he's young and inexperienced. Keegan Rosenberry has had some good games and some bad games, but like, you know, fullback is not a good position. We've gone on ad nauseum over the last 11 games about how center back's not a very good position. This was at least, here's one other good thing, Matt. I like the formation that Coach Connor Casey came out in, or at least interim Coach Connor Casey came out in. He went 4-2-3-1. I thought that the formation gave Jack Price the opportunity to get forward a little bit, and he looked a little bit more effective linking up play from deep, but also not being the guy who received the ball from the center backs and was expected to like spring it long or anything. Like, he was able to dribble forward. He was able to connect. He was able to play long ball. He looked better because he had somebody next to him who was doing the defensive dirty work, and that's Danny Wilson. And Danny Wilson did an okay job there, but really it didn't work, because when the opposing team came back at them, it wasn't hard to get through the two defensive midfielders. Yeah, I mean, you know, the real simple way to say it is that none of the old problems that have plagued this team from the beginning of the season, basically of how easy it is to just one-on-one crush any single one of the defenders on the back line, none of those problems went away. The same silly problems keep coming up, and it's kind of disappointing. You know, that last thing I'll say is that when the team tied the game up at 2-2, you know, I don't imagine there's a single fan in the Rapids world who didn't look up and assume that they were going to cough up that lead. That, like, that's where we're at. That, like, we just live in dread. That, like, you know, drawing up the game just feels like a momentary, you know, fake out for fans. Like, oh, they're giving us hope. Hope feels good. I mean, the other thing is, last thing I'll say, Matt, and I'll turn it over to you, is that when it got to 2-2 and it was late in the game, you thought to yourself, you know, a draw's not that bad. At least we won't lose our, you know, ninth game of the year. But on the other hand, you're thinking to yourself, we still haven't won a game yet. We haven't won a game yet. And I'm trying to convince myself late in the 11th match of the season that a 2-2 draw is okay, that I should be really happy with a 2-2 draw. And like, I thought that to myself at like the 80th minute and was like, what the hell is wrong with me? I sit down and watch a Rapids game and I'm contented by having 3 points after 11 games. That's where I'm at. And the ridiculous thing, Matt, is I didn't even get 3 points. We only have two. We still only have two. We may still have two in another week or another month. When are we ever not going to have 2 points, Matt? When?
I don't know, Mark. You know, I've definitely accepted the nihilism at this point, and you know, especially with I'm gonna make a thread out of the every single game from now on, listeners, in which the Rapids do not win a game. I will take a screenshot or a photo or something significant from that match that is not a win and add it to the thread that I have pinned on my Twitter right now, with the "Hello Darkness, My Old Friend," and I'm gonna see, Mark, how far into the lyrics and how far into the song we can get before the Rapids ultimately win a game, and what does that look like? So we'll see how that goes. But no, I agree with you, because, you know, I'm finishing up, what we think about when we think about soccer right now, and this week. And one of my favorite lines from it, it's not the losing that kills you, it's the hope that things will change. And now I think, like, for Rapids fans, like, there is no hope at this point. Like, it's just pure nihilism. Like, you thought, oh, maybe they're giving us hope, maybe I'll be content with a 2-2 draw. And my thought up in the press box at DSG as soon as Danny Wilson put that ball in was, I can't wait to see how the Rapids are gonna find a way to lose this game 3-2. To your point about some of the issues still existing, I do think that the Rapids address some of their issues. I think Lalas Abubakar right now is probably, once he's 90 minutes fit at altitude for sure, is going to be the best center back that the Rapids have on the roster, and I will include a fully fit and healthy Court Ford in that list as well. I think Lalas Abubakar is better than that, and I like some of the chance creation that Jonathan Lewis provided from a little bit of a wide role, and I think Lewis provided in a way that I think we might have been hoping that Acosta was going to, and Acosta hasn't done that. So I saw, you know, but these are band-aids over open wounds right now. You know, I'm just reaching for, like, the areas in which the Rapids were most significantly bad are slightly less bad with those two players, and we saw glimpses of that in this game on Saturday. Lalas Abubakar is not single-handedly going to solve all of their defensive options, and I think Jonathan Lewis is going to have to well, at least this year, is going to have to well outperform, you know, the transfer fee that was sent to NYCFC in order for his rights, I think, in order to, you know, be the quality secondary scoring option that this club needs, beside Kai Kamara. I completely forgot Kai Kamara missed a PK in this one, Mark. Oh my god. So I agree with you on all of your points. I think it's time for us to talk about VAR and the various decisions that they had in this game. You had the, slide tackle by Justin Glad that was studs up, but not a whole lot of momentum in the 35th minute that Kellen Acosta avoided. A foul was called, and, you know, Acosta was pretty hot about that because he could have gotten, you know, he could have broken an ankle, Glad was initially given a red card, and then VAR determined that to be a yellow card, and then you had the, you know, now infamous situation with the handball. I disagree with the decision to overturn the card to Glad, Mark. I agree that he, you know, he didn't completely put his studs up. He obviously, with a little, mostly due to Acosta's moving, avoided contact. Based on Acosta moving, he got the ball, which some referees in MLS will say winning the ball is cause for, you know, decreasing the punishment for a potential, foul or, you know, a booking, in that case. And he did not have a whole lot of momentum. And I've seen plays like that only be given a yellow card. Where I line up on that, Mark, is I come back to a lot of these things of, do we want that to be the standard for America as a soccer nation, for MLS, a league that is aspiring to be one of the best in the world, you know, in the not so far distant future, but not in the next 10 years, certainly. And for me, I want to be a soccer nation to where fouls that are potentially going to ruin guys' careers, and, you know, Kellen Acosta breaking an ankle, I think, would certainly fit into that schema. I want to live in a soccer nation to where fouls like that are discouraged, to where fouls like that, to where even if only 10% of them lead to an injury and maybe only 1 in 25 lead to a serious injury, I don't want those fouls to be normalized. In that, for me, even though it may not be standard in MLS or we've seen worse things, only also been given a yellow, that is a red card for me on Justin Glad. Going back to our breaking down of the Axel Schuberg red card and the handball in the Snow Classico against Portland, I, based on my view on that, on what I perceive to be handball, what I perceive to be a hand in the natural position, and ball to hand in the sense of the ball changing directions and how much reaction time did the RSL defender have to react to the play going off of Shinyashiki or in the area of Andre Shinyashiki, I haven't seen a good angle to see how it deflected or if somebody else took a touch in that point. For me, based on the reaction time and the distance between the final deflection and going off the hand, that is a ball to hand for me. You know, in Matt Pollard is the emperor of FIFA. That is not a handball. Based on how we've seen MLS refs call plays in recent years, how we've seen them certainly cover it this season, and how they have approached reviewing that, particularly when they decide to go to video review for it, I felt like that was a textbook handball for them. The ball, you know, the hand was in an unnatural position. It was not within the silhouette of the player. It was certainly far extended from them, and it clearly goes off the upper arm area. You know, you saw the tweet from our, you know, mutual photography friend, John Babiak for that. So I disagree with both of the fouls. I disagree with the Justin Glad foul in terms of how I principally view the game, but I can understand how, based on how the league has called it recently, that they would be a little bit more lenient with that. And I have the same view in terms of the handball call. That said, I would not, if there are Rapids fans out there who have huge gripes and are willing to die on the hill that should have been a red card on Glad and a PK for the Rapids in the final minutes, have the hill. I'm not going to try and besiege you at all.
Yeah, I agree with you on the handball call. My only comment on the red card is I find it difficult for the league to take a call that looks pretty good on the field, and then when you review it in video review, maybe you could overturn it, but maybe you can't. And honestly, to me, it looked like it probably was a red card upon review. You know, my take is I guess you could downgrade it to a yellow, but you don't have to. And the evidence wasn't strongly there that the call on the field was bad. I felt like Vlad made a dangerous tackle. We have seen Colorado Rapids players be sent off this year for equivalent situations. And so I think that would have been, it would have, I think it should have stood as a red card in the 35th. You know, the one, as much as I like, I'm always a fan of the idea that you have to win your game on the field regardless of the referee's calls. And this team kind of didn't, you know, like they didn't really do it. I mean, you know, you could also make the argument that Sebastian Anderson's contact in the box didn't warrant a PK, but it did. I mean,
that's a penalty for me, Mark.
Yeah,
I didn't have a gripe with either of the penalties that were called, the one that led to the Rusnak goal or the foul that ultimately had Kai Kamara take the shot from the spot.
Yeah, it's a close call, and you could argue that Kai Kamara one, you know, might have been a makeup, but yeah. Last comment, you know, not on the officiating, was I did think that, you know, back to good thing, I suppose. I did think that both Jonathan Lewis had a pretty good debut, and I liked lining up Nicholson again up opposite him, and I thought Lalas Abubakar had a really good overall game. The team just needs to be able to put someone next to him who can complement him, and they need to figure out, you know, how the two are going to play together. You know, overall, I thought the team played better this game than they normally do. They just didn't get a result, which is kind of par for the course at this point. But, you know, playing really well but losing is not what we're going for anymore. You know, it's down to get a result, get several results, because otherwise we're looking at, you know, like I said before, potentially the worst season in MLS history.
Yeah, Mel, just one stat for you there, Mark. Sam Nicholson, his first start at home of this season and also his first 90 minutes of the season, spoke with him in the post game, and he said, back's feeling good from that standpoint. He's not 100% in terms of fitness, but he's going there. And you know, we haven't seen, you know, Sam Nicholson, you know, fully operational battle station, you know, really since I would say August or September, whatever that LAFC game, at LAFC last year, we really haven't seen him from that. And I think he brings a different dimension, either in a wide midfield role or possibly even as an underneath dribbly striker underneath Kai Kamara, that I think is just maybe not a better look than what I think Diego Rubio is capable of being if he can control his temper, but certainly a different look and a different weapon for Connor Casey to have on his Rapids offense utility belt that I think that he would appreciate. I don't think we've got anything else to say about this game, Mark. I guess the last thing that I'll say is that for me, at least from an emotional standpoint of looking at how fans react to it, I think this loss probably hurts the most this season. One, because it's against a rival. Two, because it ties, you know, a pretty dubious record, such, you know, with said rival. But also, this was one of really the only games that the Rapids have lost to where I felt that they were in it for long stretches of the game. And, you know, you saw at least in the immediate, you know, maybe 4 to 5 minutes after they made it 2-2, you know, RSO was reeling and they were trying to figure things out. And Mike Pecky made a couple changes, brought on a couple subs to try and stabilize things. You know, the Orlando game was so back and forth, but you never really felt until the final goal went in that anybody had really landed a knockout punch or the punch before the knockout punch. But, you know, you look at the other games, you know, the game against Houston was over the 30th minute. The game against DC United was over at halftime. And the game against Seattle Sounders was over in 15 minutes. And the reality is that the game was tied in the 50th minute. The Rapids had some good things going for them, and they still found a way to lose. And, you know, if I'm doing a blame pie on this overall loss, I think the Rapids definitely deserve more of that blame pie than the officials deserve for some of their, you know, poor decisions or decisions to go to VAR when I think for you and me, Mark, those calls on the field were not clear and obvious, and ultimately calls that I think Rapids fans have a gripe about and ultimately went against them in the ways that we've seen the flip-flop result go clearly against the Rapids and in favor of the other team. Shall we move on, Mark?
Please.
listeners, this coming Sunday at Dignity Health Sports Park, formerly known as the StubHub Center, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on the LA Galaxy. That will be a 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. This will be an altitude Sunday game, but not nationally televised, to my understanding. Mark, we are currently 11:34 through the Colorado Rapids 2019 Death March of Doom. The Rapids are sitting in 12th in the Western Conference, comfortably last in the Supporters Shield. They have 2 points. Every other team in MLS has at least 10. They played 11 games, 0 wins, 9 losses, 2 draws, and a negative 14 goal differential. Despite losing 3 games in a row, all to Eastern Conference opponents, the LA Galaxy are still second in the Western Conference, behind only their crosstown rivals, LAFC. They have 22 points off of 12 games played, 7 wins, 4 losses, and 1 tie, and a +2 goal differential. I don't think we need to talk a lot about this roster or the team that is on it. Listeners, you should be very aware of who Zlatan Ibrahimovic is by now. They have U.S. international Sebastian Legette in their midfield, along with, I think, what we can now call the Holy Trinity between him, Jonathan Dos Santos, who is questionable for this coming game on Sunday, and then the recently acquired Joe Corona from Liga MX. They have a rotating cast at center back, and none of those positions have really, really worked. First-year head coach Guillermo Barros-Gelota, formerly of Columbus Crew as a player, won an MLS Cup with them in 2010, question mark? 2008, question mark? With Siggy Smid, whenever the Crew won their MLS Cup, longtime legend of the Argentine national team, and Boca Juniors, where he was most recently coaching them before coming to the LA Galaxy this year, along with Dennis DeClosa as their general manager. David Bingham is still in goal for them. They've got a couple, young fullbacks who've been kind of exciting. Jorgen Shelvik, who was Danny Wilson levels bad at center back last season, Mark, has been moved out to left back, but is still having some of his issues. This is a team that can score goals. Uriel Antuna was a nice pickup for them, and he's banged in a couple goals for the LA Galaxy. But this is still a club where everybody revolves around Zlatan, and how well they're able to play to get the ball to Zlatan very much indicates how good they are. And if the opponent is able to break them down defensively, as we saw NYCFC do to the Galaxy on Saturday, kind of decides whether or not they win by a lot, or it's a close game, or they lose by a lot and don't score any goals. Mark, what do you see in the LA Galaxy, and which Rapids defender is getting dunked on by Zlatan on Sunday?
All of them, but more importantly, I can't do nearly as good a job with the LA Galaxy as Matt does. Matt covers them extensively for Last Word on Soccer. He knows the team really, really well, so props to you, Matt. I just wanted to go back 2 games so that I could look at, you know, lineup changes that they've made. They have played Chris Pontius as a starter, although usually he comes off the bench. Pontius can kind of play, he usually plays as a wing role, but as an older player who's not quite as fast, he's just as good kind of coming out of the midfield. They play Joe Corona, you know, sometimes as a deep lying mid, although I think he's better at as kind of a both ways, natural number 8. Early in the season, it was, get the ball down the wing, sling it across, and let Zlatan pound it home with his head. I think there's less of that this, you know, in the last couple of weeks as they're starting to become more dynamic. I don't know much about Diego Polenta, but I think he's improved their back line. My last comment is a total homer comment for people of my own ethnic background, which is Daniel Sterrez is a nice Jewish boy from Pacific Palisades, and so I am ride or die with the nice Jewish boy. It says he's 6 feet tall, but I swear he looks huge to me. He's just this big hulking dude. So I think he's like very interesting because he's never been like exceptional as a center back, but he's also not bad. Like he typically doesn't make big mistakes. Like he doesn't get exposed all by himself very often. He's usually well spaced. He's big enough and he handles dead balls really, really well. So, I don't know that he'll ever make anybody's top 10 defenders in Major League Soccer list, but he's also like a steady, reliable kind of guy there who just generally doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And I think that that's notable. I think he's very likely to study his tape this week and keep Kai Kamara under wraps because, That's what he does. You know, he usually is the guy who occupies the one big striker for the opposing team. So yeah, that's my, take on the LA Galaxy. You know, they are better than the Colorado Rapids all around, pretty much at every single position. I think the only last valuable important thing to say is they do have four losses and a draw on the season. However, they have a 6-win, 1-loss, 0-tie record at, what did you call it? Dignity Corpse Protection?
The stadium formerly known as the StubHub Center, which is the stadium formerly known as the Home Depot Center.
That's much better than Dignity Health or whatever it's called, which yes. Sounds like a home for palliative care when your 98-year-old grandmother is in the final stages of life.
Mm-hmm.
I would not name a health company Dignity Health. It just doesn't sound good.
Yeah, okay. That's so so a couple of comments on personnel, Mark, because, you know, the Rapids haven't seen the LA Galaxy recently, and, you know, maybe some of you dear listeners who are watching the LA Galaxy focus so much on Zlatan that there are other players, several of whom you mentioned, Mark, who I think are worth mentioning. I think a good comparison for Daniel Serres, Mark, I think he's maybe a budget or a poor man Steve Birnbaum in a lot of ways. Another nice. Jewish connection. Wow, I did that and didn't even realize it. Awesome. Good job, Matt. And I think
a Jewish starting 11, which is probably it would be impressive because I don't think I could.
Okay. And then I'll say the midfield assignments have been very, very simplified and have worked for the LA Galaxy regardless of who's on the field. I would say, if it's Joe Corona and, let's say Jonathan Dos Santos, who for my money, Zlatan actually called him. He did an interview, with Unimas, with a Spanish language translator. And he called, Jonathan Dos Santos the engine in the midfield. I would say, the two are kind of dual 8-6s where they're kind of exchanging off with each other, not unlike what Marcelo Sarvas and Juninho were with the LA Galaxy when they were winning MLS Cups. I think a good other comparison for them would probably be that Jonathan Dos Santos is probably the Michael Bradley to Joe Corona being the Jonathan Osorio up in Toronto FC. Joe Corona is the more likely one to go forward, but I think Jonathan Dos Santos is better with, say, that 30-yard Regista pass out of the midfield that then opens something up. You know, Jonathan Dos Santos is going to make the pass before the pass that ultimately leads to the goal, where Joe Corona is going to be a little bit more dribbly link-up play. And then I'd say Sebastian Legette, the Galaxy don't play with a number 10. I don't think there's anybody on the LA Galaxy right now who, is a functional number 10. I should say, listeners, that, Roman Alessandrini, French international with them, normally has been a left midfield for them in the past. He is out. He had a massive hamstring injury in the home opener, maybe the second game of the season, and he had to have surgery for that. He is out, and expected to come back in the middle of August. So do not expect him if you're cynically trying to load up on LA Galaxy players on your MLS fantasy team. Don't pick Alessandrini. So Sebastian Legette has been in more of a central role for them. Again, more link-up play, the pass before the pass. And I would say of the midfielders, he's probably the one that orbits closest to Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Whoever's going to be a secondary striker next to him, you know, he's Mercury, and Sebastian Legette is Venus in this case, where I would say Jonathan Dos Santos is probably Jupiter. You know, David Bingham's, you know, Alpha Centauri or whatever. So that's what's going on for them. I think it's going to be interesting to see who they play at center back. I think in terms of aerial challenges defensively against Kai Kamara, I agree with you, Mark, that Daniel Serres is the best option. If they want just a good organizer defensively, Diego Polenta, the Uruguayan, is the most significant player that they have. He has a really, really interesting story, Mark. He had a really, really bad injury playing in South America like a year and a half ago, and then he knew he was getting rehabbed. He got released by his club, and he just wanted a lifestyle change. He had a young family, so he took his family and like moved into the mountains, and then just like was on a vineyard, and then just like rehabbing with his personal trainer and just like breathing fresh mountain air in South America. And like there was a point where like the most recent report prior to the rumors with the LA Galaxy was that he was just going to retire and just like raise his family in the mountains completely off the grid and not a part of society and just run this wine vineyard. And and GBS convinced him to come to the LA Galaxy. Wow. So, I mean, if there's a story that Spanish The Athletic were to ever go after as far as an MLS player, I think Diego Polenta's, like, that whole journey would be really, really fascinating to go down. And then probably their best passer out of the back is Giancarlo Gonzalez, who scored a couple weeks ago. I want to say he had the game winner against Houston, Costa Rican international. So really, really good friends with all the other Ticos in MLS play. He's probably going to be the best on the ground. If Jonathan Dos Santos isn't able to play in this game and they're looking for more service out of the backfield, it's going to be on the right foot of Giancarlo Gonzalez. There's one other thing that I want to talk about with this game, Mark, and that is I think both of these teams right now are struggling with a secondary scoring option. You know, we kind of saw, you know, with the two goals for the Rapids on Saturday, but they're still very much dependent on Kai Kamara. Their best chances is to get service to Kai Kamara, and there's no real clear secondary option for them right now. You know, yeah, Kellen Acosta scored, but that was kind of a broken play. I wouldn't rely on Danny Wilson being, you know, a golden boot contender for the Rapids going forward. No. But, you know, it's kind of a, with Diego Rubio having some issues, Andre Shinyashiki being a young player, you know, maybe Sam Nicholson's ready for another 90 minutes. There's not a clear, Kai Kamara occupies the defense, somebody else is open, that person is in a good position to score. And other than Uriel Antuna in a couple moments, there's not really an obvious candidate for the LA Galaxy either. Yeah, Sebastian Lletget could get 5 goals this season. If Ramon Alessandrini was healthy, he'd probably be, a 10 and 12 kind of player, but he's not. I think, you know, we could see this game get really, really direct really quickly, kind of like we saw on Saturday with Sam Johnson getting a lot of service. I just think this game is going to be so dependent on who gets more service to their number 9. I think that's probably going to be the LA Galaxy. And as much as we love Kai Kamara on the show, Mark, if you give me a choice between, if I have one game to save my life and I can only start one of them up top as the number 9, I'm taking Zlatan.
Zlatan, for sure, for sure. All right.
Okay, Mark, let's do predictions. Who you got on Sunday and why?
Galaxy are going to humiliate and dunk on the Colorado Rapids. I'm going to conservatively say we're going to lose this one 3-1, but in my heart, I feel like we're going to lose this one 4-0.
Okay, I've got this one being 2-0. I think it'll be 2-0 at halftime, and I think the LA Galaxy will just want to jog it out. They've got a busy schedule coming up, and the Rapids aren't going to show anything that really legitimately threatens them. And I'll say it'll be a brace from Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and we'll say Joe Corona gets an assist in this one.
It's a weird one because the Galaxy and the Rapids are both playing a Sunday night game. They're the last game of the weekend. A lot of teams have a Wednesday game, but neither the Galaxy nor the Rapids do. So it's a kind of a scheduling quirk. Is one of those, is the Galaxy Rapids match, one of the national broadcasts? Is it the Fox game or is it?
It is not. So it'll be on Altitude for us. It'll be on Turner Sports for those of you in the Southern California area. And then, you know, ESPN Plus for anybody who is outside, you know, the Altitude sports sphere of influence.
Do you think they put it that way because Fox and ESPN have the right to like flex a game or two in their package? Like if they're looking a couple, like a month out, they're like, oh, that looks like a really good game, let's take that one? Or like, why is that there, do you think?
Generally speaking, the LA Galaxy and LAFC like to not have simultaneous home games, right, on Saturday night. I don't really understand that necessarily because, like, it's not like they're competing for a mutual audience. Like, everybody's picked sides at this point, and they also don't have mutual TV issues because LAFC, all of their stuff is off of YouTube Red or whatever the YouTube Premium option is. So it's not like, so I'm not sure exactly why. Maybe there's something else going on at the StubHub Center. The LA Galaxy generally either like to have either if they're not going to have the Saturday night games, they like to have a slightly earlier Sunday match. So, you know, if the Galaxy had it their way, I think, let's say 14 of their 17 home games would be Saturday, 7 p.m. Pacific, and then the other ones would be, you know, Sunday, 5 or 6 p.m. So I'm not sure why this game is on Sunday and not a nationally televised one.
Could be a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert on Saturday. Could be a surfboard convention. Who knows?
That is very much Los Angeles, Mark. Okay, Mark, you did some digging off of some previous digging you've done regarding Colorado Rapids prospective head coaches, and you want to talk about it, so we should talk about it.
Nice. Well, I wanted your reactions, Matt. First of all, obviously, I want to self-promote my own work because that is really why I was put on this earth, Matthew, in order to pat myself on the back and say what an amazing and incredible writer I am, and also to force all of our miserable listeners to read more and more of our content, whether it is actually good or whether it is pointless, brainless, spineless drivel. That's
no wonder you like to do Seder every single Friday.
Ba-dum-bum. That's why I'm a rabbi, so that I can make people listen to me and tell them that they can't leave. So I just wanted you to kind of give me your quick reactions to the 12 possible coaches that I named in an article for the Denver Post this past Monday. So the first 12 on the top of my list are Jason Kreis, Josh Wolf, Tab Ramos, Robin Fraser, Jamie Franks, Paul Clement, Rafael Puente Jr., Robert Dante Siboldi, Alan Pardew, a.k.a. Sack Alan Pardew, David Moyes, Bob Lilly, and Brendan Burke. Matt, any thoughts or comments or questions about any of the 12 names I just dropped on your head?
I think all of the ones that have connections to American soccer or are currently employed by U.S. soccer are worth at least giving a call just to see if there's interest and would they like to discuss what they would do with the team. I'm kind of off the – I think Jason Kreis was a very, very successful coach in certain situations in the MLS 2.0 era. He hasn't done anything for me in the MLS – we'll say the post-TAM era of MLS to think that he's functional, and I also think he's just one-dimensional in terms of his system. So if Kreis looks at this current roster and is having a having coffee or a phone conference call with Porik Smith and everybody and thinking, oh, you know, there's stuff that I would do with the diamond that Hudson wasn't able to do, where I think I could, you know, I could get more out of Jack Price than we saw from Jack Price previously with the Rapids, then I think that's a conversation worth having. Other than that, I think he's so entrenched with what he's doing and trying to get the U.S. youth team to having a successful Olympics that I'm not really sure that that's worth a call. I have been one of the biggest advocates outside of Red Bull's Twitter for Robin Fraser being, for my money, I would say since 2014. So I would say since the post Thierry Henry era of the New York Red Bulls, I think Robin Fraser has been one of the best assistants in MLS. And I think the only two that I could point to who you could make a solid argument were better than him are Mark Dos Santos, who is now a head coach of the Vancouver mm-hmm. Whitecaps, mm-hmm. And Dave Sarakin, you know, who is effectively an associate head coach, under Bruce Arena and is probably going to do awesome things in the NWSL this year with the North Carolina Courage ? So I would be all for calling Robin Fraser just to see if he's interested, you know, does he want to move outside the assistant position, especially with, you know, Red Bulls kind of being up and down and, you know, potentially Chris Armas is going to go over and be an assistant on Jesse Marsh's staff with the defending Red Bull Leipzig potentially coaching in the Champions League, and would that open the door for rumored Thierry Henry to come to the New York Red Bulls, and does Thierry Henry want to reassemble his group that he had with AFC Monaco? I'm not sure, so I would definitely call him and see if he's interested. Just because he's close, it's probably worth seeing, you know, what Jamie Franks, all the things that he's done with DU. I think if anybody's going to get awesome things at the MLS level out of Andre Shinyashiki, it's probably going to be him. I think the college game is different, and given, you know, Frank's coaching at, you know, a non-traditional powerhouse, I have some reservations about, you know, Frank's potentially making the jump from college soccer all the way to the MLS level. The only real case, really good example of that in the other than MLS 1.0, where everybody needed a coach and, you know, it was college soccer was the highest level, in America, at least, other than, I don't know if the NASL was existing or the USL at that point, but was Caleb Porter, who came in with the Portland Timbers and took a couple years to get going before they won an MLS Cup. I don't know that that's good precedent for that. Now, if the Rapids were to start, you know, Rapids 2 potentially, I would absolutely be open to having Brian Crookham interview and have the authority to appoint Jamie Franks to that position. I wouldn't dictate this to the new head coach, but if said head coach wanted to interview Jamie Franks about potentially joining his staff as an assistant in MLS, I would be open to that as well. If the Rapids had any sway, let's say Steve Trischut, no longer wants to be in Colorado Springs, I would be open to that conversation. I think a lot of the other names on your list are either completely implausible, like there's no way that person is picking up the phone to talk to Porrick Smith about coming to MLS, or just flat out disasters. Selfishly, from a media standpoint, I would not want to have to endure any more than one press conference of trying to get something out of David Moyes or try and foster a relationship in order to be functional on that standpoint.
Don't be selfish there.
Yeah. I think Alan Pardew would be fun. He'd be interesting. He'd be excitable on the sideline. I don't know that he'd actually be good. And I think he'd want way more money than the Rapids would be able to give him. So, if I am warging into Porrick Smith, I'm calling Robin Fraser. I'm seeing if the Red Bulls are interested in letting him talk to me. And I'm flying the next time that he has a bye week with the New York Red Bulls, I'm flying him out to, DIA. And I'm probably making a couple other calls and, you know, asking for personal extensions, at U.S. Soccer in Chicago.
All right. I want to drop, this is like special, awesome, secret content just for our podcast listeners and, for those who have listened this far in the show. Three names that have been floated to be by sources, and by sources I mean the way that world soccer works, and I know this from interviewing multiple coaches, is that agents for coaches send in packets to teams, and then the team decides whether that, you know, packet, you know, gets off of the main pile. So I want to send you three names of coaches who I know from agents are in the Rapids pile. Whether any of them has any shot or not is...
So, colloquially, Mark, this is equivalent to somebody applying online for a posting with their resume has not been looked at, not necessarily has been looked at or taken seriously by an HR personnel yet.
I would say that they've been looked at. I mean, even Porrick said, he said on Extra Time Radio last week, that they've already received many candidates and very good candidates. So I know that, like, Porrick gets the email from the agency. And I mean, these guys aren't schlubs. I'm talking about guys who have been managers of major world football clubs up till now. So let me drop the three names. Okay. I'm not sure I'm going to get any of the pronunciations right, but I'll do the best I can. Zilko Petrovic. Was a very successful manager in Europe, he played as a player for the Yugoslavian national team. He has managed the Urawa Red Diamonds in Japan, Al Shab in Saudi Arabia. He was an assistant at Sunderland, and until 2017, he was the manager for ADO Den Haag, which is one of the top clubs in the Eredivisie in Holland. He got sacked in 2017, although in 2016 he guided Den Haag to a pretty decent finish. In 2017 he had them in the relegation zone and got sacked. So he's one of two. Another one is Eduardo Cudet, who just finished in the Argentine league with Racing, and I think he either won the Clausura or was in the finals for the Clausura and had a really good season. He's managed Cholos in Mexico and got sacked from there about a year ago, but he has good Liga MX East and Argentina connections, which could be really valuable for the Rapids. He's more than on the slush pile for the Rapids. He's widely rumored to be in the running for all of the teams that are looking for a manager in Major League Soccer. And the last one, and it's an interesting one, and I wonder whether it's got much legs, is a guy named Fangio Busse. And Fangio Busse is a Belgian coach who has been involved with the Belgian national team and the Belgian youth team. He has coached directly Romelu Lukaku, Thorgan Hazard, Steven Defour, and Kevin De Bruyne, which is a pretty awesome thing to be able to say as a coach. And he's been a manager in Cyprus, Greece, and Belgium. So he's a pretty decent thing. I think one of the questions that you can ask, and I think you said it really well at the start of this conversation, was after having a manager with European and international experience, Matt, whether the Colorado Rapids are all in on a domestic US-based US experienced coach, or whether Liga MX experience is valuable, South American experience is valuable, whether the Rapids are willing to go in on a European coach or even an English Premier League coach. You know, one of the guys I mentioned, Paul Clement, was coach of Reading until recently, and this was my favorite. He was the guy who followed up at Swansea after they fired, Bradley. So I think it could be really interesting for the Rapids to name a coach who actually, was also a manager of Swansea. I would just love to see the game where Clement goes, against Bob Bradley and they shake hands after the match. That'd just be funny to me. But probably not worth hiring a manager. Of all the things I said, Matt, I think you are probably the most right that the most likely two candidates, for this team right now, just the conventional wisdom, which might not be worth a plug nickel, but is still worth putting out there, are Josh Wolf and Tab Ramos. Those are the two most likely candidates. The only reason, it wouldn't be Tab Ramos is that he might think, to be honest, that dropping from the U23s to, the Colorado Rapids is a step down. And to your point, Matt, Robin Fraser is really well liked in Toronto, has had a sniff at a lot of jobs, in Major League Soccer without actually getting the job. The only knock on him was that he was a coach. His only head coaching experience was with Chivas USA, and clearly that went really poorly. So whether that's on
him. Well, it went really poorly for Tab Ramos as well, and then It went really poorly for Wilmer Cabrera, and they've all gone to do great things after that. So, you know.
That's a really good point. Maybe having a really unsuccessful couple seasons or season with Chivas USA is a guarantee that you will go on to do better things.
And my response to that, Mark, is the only year that Chivas made the playoffs, who was their head coach?
Don't know.
Bob Bradley.
Oh, really? Is that true?
Yeah, and then if you're including Chalice, you know, who flamed out spectacularly in the most boss way with Liga MX, he's now coaching for a mid-table team in Liga MX. He is Mexican by birth. So, you know, I want to go down this list now. I'm going to go through the Wikipedia list tonight, listeners, and look at every single person who's ever coached Chivas USA, and are they in a better situation right now? Maybe that's the key to everything. Maybe you just got to hunt down people who are the scourge of the goats and then think that that's the answer.
Last question, Matt. Who's the manager that you know is available or has been recently fired anywhere in the soccering world who you would absolutely cringe and want to vomit and die if they got named to the Colorado Rapids?
Jose Mourinho.
Mourinho. Wow. That's a tough call. That's a tough call. For me,
I don't want to be patronized by the special. Again, this is purely from a media standpoint. I would stop going to post game media availability just because I know that I wouldn't get anything out of it, and that would be a fantastic, like the Hard Knocks, like LAFC special on ESPN+. That would be a fascinating thing for them to see with the Colorado Rapids, in the same way that the Sunderland one was like watching the soccer documentary equivalent of the Titanic. Like,
for me,
Jose Mourinho would walk into the season, and instead of just like, oh, let's see if we can steer out of the iceberg, Jose Mourinho would steer into the iceberg.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever coming to Major League Soccer.
No, he's not.
If only because they can't afford to pay him. But for me, it's probably Sam Allardyce. I just think Sam is so... I mean, as much as Jose Mourinho's style is, I will take a 1-0 lead and cling to it with my icy death grip, like, Sam Allardyce's style is even more dull than that. It is like, kick it long, kick it long, kick it long. Maybe hope for a bit of magic from one player, and then bunker in. I mean, he might be an even less interesting coach than Jose Mourinho, who at least can coach defense.
No, I agree with you, Mark. I guess two other things that I'll add first to fact check for us. You were right, Mark. Robin Fraser, formerly of the New York Red Bulls, now with Toronto FC. And then Racing Club did win the Clausura in the Argentine Superliga, which, you know, is pretty impressive.
I know stuff, dude. I know all my stuff. I'm so smart.
Well done. So I'll take that. Let's move on to Ask HDHL, Mark, and we will start with a question from Tyler Maybe. Tyler asks, is Porik Smith trying to get fired? Should I buy him a map of all others, a map of all other soccer leagues in the world? For the love of all that is holy, why is he so infatuated with the English championship?
Let me explain. That was his response to my dropping the possibility that Paul Clement is in the running. Paul Clement was another name that got floated to me by a source with some knowledge of who's applied for the job. So, you know, I mean, Clement has better a better record and better references than other coaches who may or may not be in the running for the Rapids. But yeah, I mean, it's a you know, you, Matt, saw what went down with New England this weekend. I mean, they fired their coach at the beginning of last week, Brad Friedel. They fired their general manager on Friday. And then we all woke up on Monday and we were like, oh, good. Cincinnati, the Rapids, and New England are all looking for a coach. We can watch them duke it out for the next month. Nope. They went and hired Bruce Arena today for both positions, which is pretty wild. So, you know, it's entirely possible that a club can just willy-nilly wake up one morning and clear house and just axe their general manager. I think Porik Smith thinks he's in it for the rest of the season, and I think Porik gets to pick a new manager, and I think the Kroenke Sports Enterprise people will let him do it. And I think that he's got a little bit more time. You know, I think everybody knows that they're punting on this season, but you know, reset the clock on Porik Smith. I think he gets one more year, and I think he's got to bring in something really impressive in the summer or the winter transfer window at designated player. And if he doesn't do that, then it's his butt.
Rick Ramos asks, I know that hashtag play your kids movement is out there, but when your young backs get isolated, attacked and burned so much, Vines, Sebo, I'm assuming he's referring to Sebastian Anderson and Dylan Serna, doesn't it mean we should look for a real left back? Maybe move Wynn back to that spot? ? I think this speaks to one of the philosophies that I've discovered recently, Mark, regarding soccer is the game theory approach to soccer. That it is either finite, that you are trying to do something in this season, or build towards a goal, or an infinite perspective on it. In that, you know, there's going to be no season where Manchester City does something, and then the FA comes out and says, okay guys, no more Premier League, Man City is the greatest club of all time, like, end of story, and everything. Like, they didn't do that when the Invincibles happened at Arsenal, and they're not going to do that anytime soon. You know, it's not like that somebody's going to win a World Cup and then we're going to back up shop and, you know, say, okay, that's, you know, that's the final story of soccer. So in that, you have clubs that are approaching two very different things. You know, the New Yorks and the LAs and the Atlantas of the world are in win now mode constantly, and any burning down or buying out of contracts or firing a coach and bringing in another big name, they will do necessary in order to try and win something now at the expense of money and of the long term. And then there's the more of the infinite approach of we want stability. You know, it's a better example in Europe where, say, you have, you know, clubs that try to be, you know, say one of those yo-yo clubs that builds up to being a really good team in the second division, yo-yos between the first and the second division, promotion, relegation, and then builds up steadily to the point where the next time they get promoted, then they're a stable club in there for an extended period of time. Think Burnley in the English Premier League, as opposed to what Fulham did this year, where they spent £100 million in the transfer window and finished second worst in the table. We'll take our 19th place trophy though. And so an MLS equivalent, I would say, for that would have been the New York Red Bulls with Jesse Marsh, certainly what FC Dallas is doing, formerly under Oscar Pereja, now under Jesse Fiorinelli? Maybe, I can't remember his name. And I think we would have a very different view of this Rapids season and of the defense right now if every single game it was Sebastian Anderson, Sam Vines, Dylan Serna, let's throw Sam Rabin in there and maybe one other center back. You know, if it was all four homegrowns and the oldest one was a 25-year-old Dylan Serna and there were a couple of other teenagers starting in there, I think we would have a different approach. I think Rick Aramos at this point, that the Rapids at this point are punting on this season, and at some point Connor Casey's job is going to be set themselves up for whenever the next head coach comes in, that team is in a better position. And I am okay, and I understand where other people have a very different view of this. If the team is going to go out and consistently get burned, I would rather have the players taking those lumps be a Sebastian Anderson and a Sam Vines rather than a Declan Wynn and a Keegan Rosenberry. You know, I think starting all the guys, you know, who are in their mid to late 20s isn't really productive for them. I think that head coach, the new head coach, is going to come in and they're going to have be involved in the decision of whether or not to pick up the contract option for Tommy Smith at the end of the season. I think they're going to be in discussions about the future that Danny Wilson has with this club. I think we could certainly throw Kofi Opare, and I still have some reservations about whether or not this was Hudson ruining him, but certainly Axel Schuberg. And I think those players playing and not getting any better right now isn't as beneficial as putting those young guys in a position to where they maybe can then be that next productive player. I understand where fans want the club to bring in a left back because that has been a distinct weakness for the club, but I mean, you know, put Edgar Castillo on this team, Mark, and they're still comfortably out of the playoffs, and there's a really good possibility that they're still last in the East Western Conference. Maybe Edgar Castillo hits a Golasso in one of these games and the Rapids, you know, end up getting their first win of the season, but I think, you know, putting the best left back in MLS on this team doesn't solve all of their problems in the same way that Lalas Abubakar isn't solving all of their problems. So if you're not going to do something right now, and the season's already lost in a finite sense, I would at the very least like to prepare for the future or the near infinite situation in hashtag playing the kids. Let's move on to our last HTHL of the week, Mark, and I will throw it to you. This one comes from Austin Munez, and Austin Munez asks, in a season of crap and a Rapids fan, and as a Rapids fan, we basically have to accept crap to be sane. Who is your favorite crap Rapids player? Mark, I'm going to ask you, we'll both answer this question. Who is your all-time favorite crap Rapids player, and who is your favorite current crap Rapids player?
Nice. God, there's so many. I think my two favorite historical ones, Thomas Piermaier, who played a little bit at midfield and fullback for the Rapids like in 2014 or 2015, and he just wasn't any good. And his father was like a famous player, and that was how he got on the team. And Charles L. Elondu. Charles Elondu was this amazing diminutive winger who he had great dribbling and he was so fast and he just couldn't do anything with it. Like he did the most boneheaded things on the ball, and he would dribble around and forget that there were other people on the field. And he went from a starting spot with the team for a couple games to not in the 18 to fully released within, I think, like, you know, 2 months. Like he got a start in a game in August and wasn't with the club in November. Like that's pretty crap. Current players on the team that are crap. You know, man, it's, there's just so many of them, unfortunately. I guess just because of how things went last season and how bad they were, it's got to be Nana Boateng for me. Like Boateng had a play last year that I will never, never to my life understand, where he was in the offensive end and he got a rebound inside the 18-yard box. And he, like, did what I guess he thought was a pass back to the edge of the box, but there was nobody anywhere there. And it actually, like, if you watched it again, it looks like a clearance, except we're on our own end. And he cleared it I'm putting in air quotes on the radio, right to a player on the opposing team who ran to the other end of the field and scored a goal. And that was a terrible game in which that was only one of three terrible plays he made. And he also started at right back and did all the same terrible things that I just mentioned, in a completely new and terrible position. Like, Boateng had, like, a lot of promise, hurt his back, and then turned into an utter train wreck for this team. And we haven't seen him. I don't think he's even made the 18 this year, Matt. Has he? Like, I don't think so.
Training,
so I can't even prove that he's still with the team. But I think he is.
Oh, I've seen him at DS. Like, he's with the team. He's in training.
Yeah.
I can't recall him being in the 18 sheet. I've maybe seen him once on match day.
By the way, I mean, I'm sure you know this, or you might be forgetting it, but do you know where we got him from?
Wasn't he on loan to some Scandinavian club, but he was owned by Man City?
Man City! He was property of Man City signed him. Man City. He was property of Man City. Man City, who just won the Premier League with like the most points, like the third most points in history, right? The best team, one of the best teams in history, Emmanuel Boateng. Nana Bismarck Adje Boateng.
Yes, not to be confused with the Emmanuel Boateng bench winger for the LA Galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Mark. So I'm definitely going to echo your point on Charles Alondo. He's probably my all-time favorite crap rapid. If I were to pick somebody a little bit more recent, I think Jared Watts, I think, is the best exemplary of all of the best things that Pablo Mascherini era represented and all of the worst things that the Pablo Mascherini era represented for the Colorado Rapids. And I want to call out two particular plays. I'll say probably one of the most famous goal calls in Rapids history with, him scoring against RSL, clinching, the Rocky Mountain Cup. Our good mutual friend Richard Fleming on the goal call said, you know, Jared Watts it is. I don't think that Jared Watts was probably in spirit and intent and effort was one of the best hashtag keep fighting players for the Rapids. And then the next year he promptly had that back pass, against DC United that pretty much summed up the 2017 Colorado Rapids. I don't think there's another player that better represented the best parts of Pablo Mascherini coach teams and the worst parts of a Pablo Mascherini coach team. And then if I'm going to pick a player from the current Rapids lineup, I'm going to say I've talked a lot about relegation. So in the spirit of Ipswich Town getting relegated from the English Championship down to League One, I've got to pick Tommy Smith, you know, a player who for a good 9 months I was an apologist for, now has just become a gif-able sideline player on the bench as he's been dropped by Connor Casey.
Nice. Good job, Matt.
All right, Mark. Shall we get out of here?
Let's go.
All right, listeners, follow us on Twitter @soccer_rabbi, @LWSMattPollard for the show, Rapids96 podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHDHL. If you've got something that's longer than 280 characters, want to get in touch, have any other issues either with the podcast feature or Patreon, email us at Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. As Mark mentioned, if you want some of our cool swag, head on over to patreon.com/Rapids96podcast. If you just go to the search engine option at Patreon's homepage and just search Rapids96 or Holding the Highline, we're the first thing that comes up in both cases. If you want a special deal on the Denver Post, if you're listening to us from thedenverpost.com, head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL, all lowercase, for a special deal on all of their digital content. If you want to read some of the stuff that Mark, shamelessly plugged on the show. With that, listeners, we'll see you next week. Rapids Morgulis. Hopefully we're not talking about the Rapids breaking RSL's record with 12 games into the MLS season without getting a win, but that's probably what's going to happen. So I guess, start Zlatan and captain him on your fantasy team. We'll see you next week.